This is Truth Be Told with Tony Sweet and Captain Ron. Today we have David Adair, who is an internationally recognized leader and expert in the field of space technology, spin-off applications for industry and commercial use. He worked as a research scientist in the field of engineering, jet engineer technology, rocket science, and nuclear physics. David was part of the U.S. Navy from 1972 to 1982. He became a pilot and certified jet engineer technician. Today we'll talk about the space shuttle program and how do UFOs fly. Today we'll find out because David's going to get to the heart of it. So please welcome the Truth Be Told, David Adair.
Hey there.
Hey,
hi, David. How you doing?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, good, good. Our audience loves you already, so we're good.
David, I know we're a bit short on time today, so and your story is so fascinating. We could hear the whole 12-hour version, to be honest. Let's do the best we can, and I'd love to just kind of jump ahead here and get right to the Truth Be Told stuff, which is when you built your rocket, and it went from White Sands, and it landed at Area 51, Groom Lake at the time. And you flew there. Why don't you tell us about that experience of going down that elevator and getting in the Area 51 underground and what that was like and what you saw? And this is incredible.
We had arrived at the base and we were in a middle hangar. There was three hangars at the time. You got to remember, this is back here. This is 1971. There was a lot of construction outside. This base was still under a lot of work. And you can see where they marked out big runways that would be coming. We landed on a taxiway, but we were in the center hangar and the floor drops out from under us, and it's an elevator. And, the elevator takes us down. I'll skip all the part about the elevator, but, we flush out the floor and, it was, vast down there. When we went down about 200 feet. I'm only estimating, but it seemed like at least that deep or deeper. And then there was out in front of us when the elevator flushed out with the floor, it was a deep cavernous area that had like a rainbow shaped roof. And when the walls come down on each side, they cantered straight down and went perpendicular. And on both sides of the causeway that we were driving down, there were various other hangars and shops and labs and offices and easy personnel working on both sides and stuff. And we were whizzing by in that golf cart looking thing we were riding in. And we got down, we went for about a quarter mile. When you look straight ahead, this thing was so big, y'all. The floor bent with the curvature of the earth. So it, as far as the eye could see, and it kept on going. I don't know how, it had to be in miles long the underground part was. We only went about a quarter of a mile.
And 200 stopped. Feet down below the earth, and you can see a mile ahead of you and nothing. It's that nothing. Open of a space.
Just a big rainbow causeway. And but the interesting thing about that is how well lit everything was. And that's when you start realizing this place is not normal, because the lighting was like a paint booth. You know, you can't have any shadows. So you stick your arms out and you don't see any shadows. But you look up and there's no light fixtures. Now, you explain that one to me. Tony? And I've had everybody from all over the world try to tell me what it was. And some of their theories are pretty good. But that's just that theory. I don't know how you would light something that big without shadows, and unless it's the atmosphere. The atmosphere itself was the light. So we get down there about a quarter mile. And on the left-hand side, our left-hand side, most of the doors were sliding hangar doors, and you could look in there and see, man, there was some strange looking, I don't know, aircraft, spacecraft, whatever you want to call them, but they were designs I hadn't even seen today. And some of them looked like big teardrops with landing legs. And, others looked like arrowheads, shaped arrowheads.
And this is in like 1971, right? This isn't
exactly
recent.
Exactly right.
So in 1971, he had this advanced craft you're walking by. Yeah, it had to blow your mind.
Exactly. And then people tell me, oh, those were static models. Really? Well, how come they had drip pans under them?
Oh,
and how come they had air conditioner hoses and power cables hooked up? No, these were not models. These were actual running prototypes. They're flight ready. And they were in between flights. And people were working on them. There was a one that we went by that was really cool because I recognized it, but it was different. There was the XB-70. Y'all remember that thing called the Valkyrie?
I've heard of Valkyrie before.
It was to replace the B-52s. There were two built. One crashed in a desert in testing. The other one ended up in Wright-Patterson in I think, 1969. So I saw one sitting there. And it couldn't have been the one that was in Wright-Patterson Air Force Museum. And the canards were different up by the cockpit. These things are delta-shaped bombers. Huge wingspread, size of a football field. There you go. This thing was enormous. And this one I saw was a little bit different than that one. So they were still building. See, the idea was General LeMay wanted to replace all B-52s with the Valkyries. And he wanted to order 45 of them from, and Robert McNamara had a conniption when he saw how much the bill was. anyway, the idea was to replace them because, dig this, this is 1971, right? That XB-70 cruised at 85,000 feet at 2,000 miles an hour.
Oh, geez.
As big as it is.
That's crazy.
There's nothing today that can do that.
Yeah, that's
not
crazy.
Even come close. The B-1 can't even get to half those figures. So, and then the catch of this thing, it was designed in 1958. Where is all this coming from?
Now, at the time when you were down there and even before, could you ask any questions as you're down there? Or do they say don't ask questions?
Well, you know, let me bring you into the time period with me.
Right.
1971, I'm 17 years old. They're very condescending to teenagers.
Oh, okay.
Really bad. And so they thought, you know, I was just a little nerd. I wasn't paying attention. But I was 17 going on about 48.
Right.
So it was a problem right off the bat. I knew they were lying through their teeth. Because when we got down to where we wanted to get, the driver got out and he put his hands on these panels and he put his face against this scope looking thing coming out of the wall. And there was a flash and the door wasn't a sliding door on this hangar. It was an iris, like a camera lens, but it's about 40 feet in diameter. And this thing's opening up. And I thought, wow, that's a different kind of door. But I thought about, what did that driver do? You know, today we know palm scanners and retina scanners.
Yeah. Retinal.
That's what was opening the door. But this is 1971. We didn't even have a handheld calculator yet. That would come a couple years later with Texas Instruments. So this place was so, you know, ahead of everything. And
you're only 17 years old. Your mind has got to be blown at this point.
Right.
Yeah, I was having a hard time for multiple reasons. One was, you know, we grew up, I used to listen to Anita Bryant sing songs when I go to bed to play the records and go to sleep to national anthem music. Oh, I mean, that's the way we were back then.
Yeah.
And the government don't lie to us. My world is evaporating and crashing all around me, realizing they've got such technologies here, not said a word to anybody about it. And then it just got worse from that point, because when they opened the big iris door open, the lights came up. Once again, I'm looking for light fixtures, can't see a thing. And the lighting comes up to perfect illumination. And we go into this room about the size of a, you know, big gymnasium. And there on the far end was something sitting on a big steel platform. So we drove over to it, and they had curtains down, and I ain't talking about the kind of curtains that, you know, you have on a stage play. You know, you pull the curtain and look behind it.
Right.
Or rubber curtains, like, you ever try to pick up a mud flap off a semi?
Yeah, right.
It weighs about 200 pounds. So these things weigh tons. You're not going to grab this curtain and take a look underneath it. So they didn't want anybody, you know, bothering it. So these chains and cables started, and they lifted these big curtains up. And I was standing there, and I was having a hard enough time with lighting outside, right? Now I'm staring at an engine. It's a power plant. And mine is about the size of about 2 feet long. It could sit on a table. I'm looking at, and mine's an electromagnetic fusion containment engine. And millennials don't like big, long, complicated terms. They shorten it down to kind of a very cool name. They call my engine a Star in a Jar.
Nice.
And I actually named my company Star in a Jar Incorporated now.
I love it.
But it was an electromagnetic fusion containment engine also, but it was the size of an 18-wheel semi. And I thought, gee whiz, I got a Model A, not even a Model T. I got a Model A, and they got a Lamborghini.
Wow.
And I thought the power on this thing would have to be unimaginable. And it's designed, you can tell it's designed where it had these quick release adapters on all its corners, so it could be disengaged from the ship it's in very quickly. Now, you know, when Beirut was just having the daylight bombed out of it, our Navy pulled up with a carrier, and we ran cables to Beirut, and the carrier used its nuclear power reactors and powered the city for months. This thing could do the same thing, except it would come out of the ship, they drop it off, and it could power a planet.
It wow. had so much power.
So
that's crazy.
You know, God knows who was making this thing. And
well, didn't you ask them how they got that? If it was like shot down, dug up, like you didn't think it was theirs, did you?
No, I was standing there and I looked at it and I'm going, did y'all shoot this down or did you dig it up? You know, I said, it's not from the neighborhood, is it, boys? And it's not theirs, the Soviets, and it's not ours. Where is this thing from? And it's a power plant, so it came out of some kind of vehicle. Where's that thing at? And it probably had a crew. Where are they? Did you pick them in a jar or something? Well, that they got so pissed off about the questions. I think it dawned on them that I was a little bit quicker than a 17-year-old they were used to. And I already realized, and they asked me to help them, you know, with it because it had a hole blown in the side of it and it wasn't functioning. And I said, well, the guys are working on it. Where are they? Well, they're on summer vacation like you. You're on your summer vacation, which is, this is my summer, my junior high school summer vacation. I'm sitting here in Area 51. So anyway, I said, well, did they leave any notes? They got anything I could read? Well, son, they have homework like you do. And I'm going, you know, well, God, give me a break. So I finally got mad at him, told him, this is not ours, it's not yours. This thing's not even designed from our technological base. As big as it was, it didn't have a single weld line, seam, rivet, nut, or bolt, or screw.
Unbelievable. So even at 17 years old in 1971, you looked at this thing and you knew instantly that this had to be like an off planet or something out of this world.
Absolutely. You know, an average person would have recognized this thing's not from our technological base. Now, being I just built one, is that steamer power.
Well, if you as a 17-year-old kid built one, why wouldn't somebody else on our planet that's maybe a little bit more advanced in this be able to build one?
I don't know. I really, all through the years, I was sitting there going, I couldn't be that far ahead of everybody. but apparently, I guess I am, because people ask why. My math is better, for one thing.
David, I'm asking you, if you're saying you thought it was an alien built this or something off planet, I'm saying a 17-year-old kid yourself built one. Why couldn't our government have some other geniuses that were able to build it.
Like I said, my math was better. I was working quantum physics differential mechanics when I was seven in West Virginia coal fields. This, my whole story, you know, people ask where my power comes from and all the stuff that I do, your talents, capability. I said, well, if God's involved, he's got the weirdest sense of humor I've ever seen. No, he puts a redneck hillbilly in West Virginia sitting over in a corner of a room reading quantum physics differential mechanics. Come on, y'all. This is just crazy. And but I learned early on in my librarian friend, Mrs. Hunt, she told me, don't tell anybody you can do all this stuff. And she was right. She was about 80 years old, but she was a smart woman. She said that, you know, I'm going to get alienated if they knew all the stuff I'm doing. So I learned to play sports. Man, I could hit a ball like you wouldn't believe. And I was fast. I could run really fast. So I learned to do sports, and it really helped socializing in. But she was right. I didn't tell anybody I knew so much about I did and the stuff I was doing. And
well, David, let me ask you this. I know many times we hear about people that, you know, come up with engines and things that run on water and other significant things that can change our technology, that either their ideas and their creation disappear, and those people either disappear or silenced. How come they didn't silence you? Because that was pretty way ahead of the game.
It really shocks a lot of people when they find that I spent 11 years at ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence. So I had a really nice career in the Navy. And that's what I did when I got kidnapped the second time.
Oh, wow.
And ended up in the military. So I became part of the group. And they realized I had talent, so they started putting me to work. And the work was involved in things I didn't mind doing. It was all more defensive than offensive, so I could work with it. And I found my niche in the military, actually. I really didn't expect I would get along that well in there, but I did. And you ever think about it, it's like endless money. There's all these cool toys everywhere in the military. So I would build things. My God, I solved a problem for them the first year I was there. And they had been working on it for a couple of years. And they had 5,000 engineers on it. And they couldn't figure out how to get around this problem on a turbine. And so I designed the turbine for them. I was only 19 when I did that. So,
Well, let's go back to that big machine that you got in front of you. You're staring at this thing. You know it's not, you don't think that it was made by the military. You think it's off planet.
Oh, yeah. You know, later, quite a few years later, I was able to get some research time on the space shuttles through a thing called GAS, G-A-S, and it's called Getaway Special. Look it up. It's a real thing. For $3,000, $7,000, or $10,000, you could rent a 55-gallon drum that's on the inside wall of the cargo bay of the space shuttle. And there was hundreds of gas canisters that ran through the program. So it was when I started working with molten metals in a weightless environment, I finally figured out how that thing was built so big and it didn't have any weld line, seam lines. You could shape metal in a weightless environment with stereo sound waves. And that's what my experiments were. I started doing three-dimensional casting with stereo sound waves. People, and you know, it's funny, in a metaphysical conference, you're telling that, oh, yeah, we got that. Oh, yeah? Try interlocking a vibrato wave. Let me know how that goes for you. Try it sometime. It's difficult, y'all. I was able to build a six-speaker-sided grid, and inside that box, I was able to trace a pattern. Let's say I hold up my hand and I run a bar scanner over it. Those bar scanner codes are sent into a device I built that changes geometrically shaped, you know, the for every circle, triangle, square, rectangle, trapezoid, whatever, there's a corresponding sound for it. And so I was able to mathematically extrapolate the differences between the geometric world and the sound waves world. So what happens is you play this music and you can make an exact replica of what you just scanned. And it was perfect. And I thought, there's how they built that engine. Then I started thinking, we don't have anything like that. So that confirms for me that thing was not of our technology. It was some other technology in another world somewhere else. And they're using three-dimensional casting platforms. So who's doing that?
Craziness.
I have no idea.
Well, David, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break from our good friend George Norrie to talk about Contact in the Desert, which is coming up in just a few weeks. And David's going to be there. Make sure you get your tickets. And he's going to be doing lecture and workshop. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have more questions for David, and there's some questions from the chat room. So don't go anywhere.
Join me, George Norrie, in Indian Wells, California, for the 7th Annual Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, May 31st to June 3rd. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure filled with exciting explorations into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact. This amazing weekend offers over 50 lectures, 40 workshops, 8 exciting panels, special events, and a luncheon that I'm hosting. Contact in the Desert also features leading experts including Giorgio Tsoukalos, David Wilcock, Linda Moulton Howe, Michael Tellinger, Eric Von Daniken, Doc Wallach, and many more important researchers and scientists in the field. Contact in the Desert is your place for inside information. Join us at thecontactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. It's time to make contact. That's contactinthedesert.com. Don't miss it. Contactinthedesert.com.
All right, we're back. We have David Adair. And speaking of Michael Tellinger, we have Michael Tellinger on the show this coming Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. So make sure you mark your calendars and join us in the chat room. We'd really appreciate it. I know, Captain Ron, we have the next segment that we want to talk about this amazing man's journey.
Yeah, David, we want to ask you about the this free energy. Let's get into that topic a little bit because I know time's flying by here. Let's talk about your thoughts on the free energy and your machine, how that all relates.
I've looked at some various devices people have had. None of them are really producing what we need for the mass of power that we have. But there is some real promising things coming. What I'm working on is I've got involvement now with the Middle East, and I'm going to be going there very shortly. They want to fund my engine back to its full potential, but I've kind of persuaded them there's another route we can go. This is something that very few people even know about because I've just started it. But I'm in the process of building a manufacturing plant that will produce thorium reactors. Now, a thorium reactor runs off of salt, and they're called molten salt reactors. And it produces very little radiation, almost none. And you're going to be able to find that. See, we had a choice. It's not, I did not invent the thing, but it's been ignored since the 50s. Hmm. 1950s, the federal government had to make a decision. Did it want to go with fusion and fission route, or did it want to go with the thorium route? Well, guess what? You can't really make nuclear warhead fuel with thorium reactors. So they went fission and fusion route so they could have the pile rods and make, you know, thermal nuclear warheads. Yay, just what we need. So thorium was just kind of pushed back into the shelf and forgotten about until now, because I'm in the process of setting up the facility. the partners and I, we've already put down $5 million as a deposit on the facility. So it's going to be a very promising project. And that I'm going to take with me when I go to the Middle East. First thing that the Middle East people want, they want a thorium reactor. The thorium reactors aren't big. You know how big reactors are? Giant cooling towers out there at Three Mile. If you had went the thorium route, guess what you would not have had? There would have been no Three Mile Isle, no Chernobyl, and no Fukushima.
Wow.
And now it's come back and bit them three times. They're kind of dense. Takes a while for them to realize they've been bit. So now they're starting to get interested in thorium reactors. And of course, they want to control this and that. And I was told I wasn't allowed to build any reactor over 10 megawatt. Do you know I can build a 30 megawatt reactor that would sit on your kitchen table?
Wow.
And I was told I can't do that. Well, guess what? Bye, y'all. I'm going to Mid East. So, and it's not that I'm forgetting you. I'll come back. Crazy as this world is. Well, I have to go outside to the Middle East to come back to America to help you out. That's just crazy, isn't it? But that's the way it goes. So anyway, ironically, they want a thorium reactor at every desalination plant they got. And I thought, how odd. People who run oil for power want thorium reactors running everywhere. And they're small. And that's great because if you sprinkle them out all over the landscape, here comes your terrorists. They want to blow up a reactor. Well, you've got great big ones like, you know, you see sitting by a river. You can blow that thing down, take out a whole region. Hmm. With mine, you're going to have to blow up thousands of them. And you can't, because once you get one or two little ones, then the military's on you. And that's the end of the end of your show. So it's a great way to protect yourself from terrorism. And besides, there's not enough radiation there. Your microwave makes about the same amount of radiation as these thorium reactors do.
David, it seems like this kind of technology, obviously, people would be interested in, governments, a lot of different people. So is there threats on your life or anything? And don't you have some sort of a block on to release stuff to the internet if something should happen to you?
Yeah, I've got, you see, in 1971, there was no World Wide Web. There was no internet. There was no social media. None of that stuff existed. My God, we didn't even have... you know, calculators. We didn't have faxes and modems and cell phones and all that stuff. Now today we do. So I've learned about something called open end source, which is a very cool thing. You can build stuff on servers around the planet. And if I should run into a demise of myself, well, guess what? All the stuff that I know gets dumped on the web. All I can say is you better have a lot of paper and ink in your printer, because you're going to get all the stuff I've done for 50 years. And it'll all be dumped out consecutively. You'll be able to copy it off. And I've given you instructions right down to what screws you need. So go ahead. Blow me away. I'm dead. Like, I'm out of here. Like, the bad thing. Don't have to be here no more. That's a good deal. So, and then the thing you dread the most, the internet and the web is going to dump it all over the planet.
Good Lord.
So they might as well just keep you here for a while.
Well, they want to make sure I don't get hurt. So maybe that's why I didn't get wiped out in that car wreck.
Yeah, that's, David had a wreck last week, so it's, yep. So.
Hey, what about helium 3?
Well, now there's a fun story.
That is a fun story.
Helium 3 is an isotope that's been mutated by the heat of the sun, distributed out through the solar system by the solar winds. We don't get very much on the Earth here because we have the Van Allen radiation belt and all the layers of the atmosphere, you know, stratosphere, mesosphere, troposphere. So, however, the moon has no atmosphere, and it's saturated with helium-3. And so what's so cool about helium-3? Well, you can take an isotope and run it through even the common reactors of the day. Their efficiency would about triple and produces very little radiation. So did you, you know, y'all live in such a media bubble. I hate to admit Trump's right on some things, like the media and its
fake news.
Whatever. I don't know if this is so much as fake as it is they tell you part of the story, but they don't tell you the rest of the story.
Not like, you know, Paul Harvey?
Where's Paul Harvey when you need him? So, did you know that China is on the moon mining helium-3?
Yeah, I remember. I didn't know they were mining. I knew they made the trip, but I didn't know they were mining it.
Yeah, they landed on the backside of the moon, so we can't watch. And they have Earth movers, and they're not big as us on terrestrial Earth, but they're scooping up the helium-3, heating it up, and they roll it to the sun side of the vehicle, and the sun heats it up. The gas comes out of the rocks. Then they roll around to the shadow side, which is 200 degrees below zero, and it turns into a liquid. Then they'll bring the liquid onto a cylinder, fire it back to their mothership, and send it back to Earth. Hmm. That's all going on, y'all. You're sitting here, didn't even know this stuff. God, do you know there's the European Space Agency? Y'all familiar with that? ESA?
Of course, yes.
Okay. Did you know there's China Space Academy? Did you know that the Middle East has a new space program, which you're talking to the new director of it?
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that's where I'm going. And also, did you know that the African Union has a space program?
Did not.
That I didn't know, no.
Yeah. Well, that happened 2 months ago. Hmm. And people laugh going, African Union space program, really? Yeah, let me bring you up to current events, y'all. The continent of Africa has more wealth in its soil than the United States, Russia, and China combined. It's been untouched for centuries. No one's ever developed Africa. It's filled with, you know, zinc and nickel and chromium and titanium, and it's all laying there on the dirt. Then you got gold and silver and, you know, precious metals, you know about blood diamonds.
Right.
The continent is filled with resources. Well, for the first time in African, well, world history, actually, you know, you had Mandela and all this apartheid and all that going on down there. Well, it finally paid off. All the African tribes, for the first time in history, formed a union. And now they're taking the land back from the white people who are descendants of the British when they moved in the Boer Wars. You really should learn your history, because it's all related. This is what's happening. And now the blacks have taken back their country and all their resources, and they could afford a space program with a budget 1,000 times that of NASA.
So what is their purpose to create a space program?
Well, that's what I got to decide for. First of all, I got 1 million acres in the Congo just given to me. Now, you might say, well, what good is that? And I'm not allowed to dig anything out of the ground, okay, because we've been talking about resources. Don't want to. Follow the equator on the globe and look where it runs. It runs smack through the middle of 1 million acres in the Congo. No one on Earth has ever launched a vehicle out of the equator. Why is that a big deal? You know how NASA's been charging $10,000 per pound to get into orbit? I can use the centrifugal force of the Earth at the center of the equator and charge you $500. Think I'll have a little bit of business? Well, how's that possible? The centrifugal force of the Earth will throw my rockets out into space. No one's ever done it. They've all fired thousands of miles north of the equator. So I'm sitting on 1 million acres, dead center of the equator. What a spaceport. Think I'm going to have a little bit of business when I get there?
So that's the idea. You're going to build a spaceport to take what? Humans up into space?
Well, no, right now for heck no. Let's make some money. Let's see, who was Saudi Arabia in Christmas put a satellite in orbit. Did y'all know that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia launched a satellite into orbit. They didn't ask the NSA or CIA, can I use your satellite? Hell no, they got money. They just sent their own satellite up. Now they got their own, you know, spy satellite. What's next? Well, you saw Israel try to land a device on the moon, but it blew up when it was trying to land. That's because they launched it from Cape Canaveral with NASA involved. NASA's never going to let you get on the moon. So they probably sabotaged their own craft. But for me, we're going back to the moon. So that's one of my first projects.
You're going to go back to the moon.
Absolutely. Wow. Not me personally, but
I was going to say, you said back. So I was going to say, have you been there before?
No. A lot of people think I'm from there, but I'm not.
To the moon, Alice. To the moon.
No, but there's a reason I want to go to the moon. And the first 12 sites that my probes will land are the 12 sites that NASA said nobody can go to, because remember the DVDs, moon bases?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they got this big arch and a tower and a cannon and all that stuff. I have no idea what that stuff is, but I think it warrants a really close look. So I'm going to go land on top of them things.
Why don't you partner with like SpaceX or one of these other things that have infrastructure in place?
I don't need them, because I got people got more money than those people could ever get.
And you can get enough infrastructure to get all, because this is going to take a lot of people and a lot of.
Oh, yeah. And how am I going to run the project? I'm copying Manhattan. We're all going to be on base, and you come to work for me, and I'll pay you really well, but leave your cell phones, your laptops, your, you know, pages, modems, all that stuff at home. Matter of fact, you won't even have them on our base. You'll live there, move in with your family, just like Manhattan style. You know, we were able to keep that thing secret in the middle of a world war.
That's true.
Don't tell me you can't pull it off. But I'm going to, you know, separate all the communications that would be, you know, it's running rampant.
What's your time frame?
Pardon? Time frame?
Yeah.
I figure we'll start operations in less than a year from now.
Is that starting the build?
Pardon?
Starting the build?
Yeah, starting to build.
From what's your projection from start to finish?
Well, maybe I should bring you up to date on something.
Yeah, because you said history. I'm like, where in the hell we find this history? Except no, through
well,
you.
Well, have you heard of this? Have you ever heard of anything called the United Humanitarian Trust Fund?
I have. Look it up.
Go look it up on the globe. Now, it's ambiguous as it can be, because I'm not sure. I think it's 1%ers that are putting this together, but they're building a second Dubai outside of Cairo.
Hmm.
And that's where my new home is being built. It's crazy. By the time y'all catch up with all this, I'll be on my way to the moon.
Unbelievable.
Well, give us a call halfway.
Yeah, I had no idea this was where this was going to go. I didn't know you were doing any of this stuff. That's incredible. So you're going to be up. When do you launch? Tell me that.
I won't know until I get there to really get the timetables.
I mean, it feels like that's a 50-year project. It sounds like you're going to do it.
Oh,
you
no,
know.
No. It's not going to be decades. We have off-the-shelf stuff to get us into orbit right now. It'll get us on to the moon. I mean, look what Israel did. That was a private little company, and it sent a probe all the way to the moon. It's already done it, past tense. We're positioned with hardware, spaceware, where we can really get to where we need to go. There's a lot of fanfare going on. But a lot of it, I don't know why, but it seems to be smoke and mirrors. We hear a lot of stuff rumbling, but we don't see things happening. And that's true within the confines of continental America. But you got to think a little bigger here. The rest of the world is not running on America's Julius Caesar calendar. They're moving along a lot faster. And they're a lot more advanced than you are. Just look at the world of robotics. You think we control that? No, it's worldwide. And who's really leading it? Well, let's see. Saudi Arabia just gave an AI its first citizenship. Wasn't the United States, was it? No. Hmm. So Saudi Arabia. Where am I going? Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So
it does seem that every government or every politician that's ever in office, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, Saudi Arabia is always there right next to him. So it does make sense.
Well, throw me over there. That will make even more not make sense.
Right, right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in our chat room that are, you know, that have questions, but they're some that you totally agree with you, some that do not. And when, because my thing is, for how many years we haven't heard anything about the moon? No landings, right. No trips. What's been going on in this time? All this stuff that you've been talking about, has it just been hush hush? Because even NASA, it just seems like, you know, they've kind of just taken a back burner.
That's the biggest piece of crap you're ever going to encounter. NASA, never a straight answer. I have nothing to good to say about NASA. You haven't had a decent program or leadership since Von Braun left, and when he died back in 72.
Wow.
You don't even know what they're doing half the time. And whatever they're doing, they're counterproductive. They're trying to put the brakes on everything. All they keep telling you, let's go to Mars. Let's go to Mars. You want to cost to do that? That's a $500 billion just to start program.
Yeah.
What senator or congressman is going to get that kind of funding? No one. And they know it. You're going nowhere.
Well, what are you saying that you're going to do on the moon? Is it going to be to get helium-3? Is that the plan, or is there something else?
Well, it's a grocery list. I have a whole bunch of things I want to do. Helium-3 is one of them. The other one is go to those sites that we're told not to go to.
Of course.
You know, and think about that. They asked me, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to send a signal back to Earth. You're going to do a pay for view? Hell no, it's free. Why is it free? You can make money. I don't have to. I'll have 2 miles of sponsors outside the door paying billions. Because how many viewers you got? Everybody, all 8 billion of you. Because wouldn't you want to see what's on those sites at the moon?
Of course, of course.
And if I'm lucky, like I told the 1%ers, I said, you guys got so much money. You got everything but immortality. Can't even buy that. But I have a way of giving you immortality. And they went, how? I would like to have a name bigger than Neil Armstrong. How's that possible? You fund these programs. We go to those 12 sites we're not supposed to. Third or fourth site, some little critter comes down with a shoulder-fired weapon, blows our satellite out of existence. And next day, one big word across all the newspapers, contact. And whoever funded that will go into history for all eternity. Immortality. David, let's go to the moon. So, okay, we're going.
Well, David.
Matter of fact, they asked me if I'm going to, what would I call the program? Alice. To the moon, Alice.
That's right. To the moon, Alice. What? You know, so what? People in the chat room actually are asking a question, and this is a couple questions. I wouldn't mind knowing it myself. And so some people are saying, why spend all this money on the space travel going to the moon when our planet is suffering? And why not, you know, and also, and what are you expecting to find on the moon? Why is the moon so important? Because a lot of people think it's just this big dead rock up in the...
It's anything but. All right, let's address part of that. That's extremely loaded and complicated question.
Right. So you have 30 seconds. I'm just kidding.
Let's chop it up a little bit where it makes some sense to you. Okay, back in the Apollo program, you know, I've worked for almost 45 years in an area of the space program called spinoffs. Type in spinoffs on the internet. Look what it is. That is an unwanted stepchild of NASA. Spinoffs used to be in Washington, D.C., but now its address is Wheeling, West Virginia, Jesuit College. How'd that get there? Well, the Pope of Port Barrel, Senator Byrd, pulled that thing up there, and his son runs it. A little nepotism, maybe?
Maybe.
But the problem is, or not problem, but the good thing about it is, we have to get somewhere in space, and I got to get a human being there. For me to get that human being there, I have got to solve about 500 problems to getting there. And each of those problems I solved turned into a product. How so? Well, let's see. We sent astronauts to the moon. You got 3 guys sitting in a capsule about the size of a walk-in closet. They're eating food and they're drinking. And after about 3 days, something's got to give, y'all. So it was going to be a problem. And everything floats. It's a real problem. So we build a material that can absorb the nastiness while they change their diapers. And then the next thing born, disposable diapers. That's where they came from. You think that made a couple of dollars? Yeah. Billions of them sold. Now, that's called a spinoff. There are 100,000 spinoffs out of the space program that you don't even realize what they are. Let me give you another example. I personally encountered one of them the other day in a car wreck. You got a capsule coming in from space, Apollo capsule. It's coming in about 5,000 miles an hour, and you got to slow it down. It's kind of hard landing at 5,000 miles an hour. So these big parachutes come out, three of them about the size of a football field. It'll slow that capsule from 5,000 miles an hour to about 18 miles an hour in just a few seconds. Well, you better have some kind of super shock absorber system between the parachutes and the capsule, or the astronauts go out through the bottom of the capsule, and they ain't going to be happy about that. So I look at that, and I call up DOT, Department of Transportation, tell them what I want to do, and they're going, are you serious? Yeah. So you see these guardrails on the side that has these canisters, they're all hooked together?
Mm-hmm.
And the movies have you to believe they're full of sand or water. You hit barrels full of sand or water at 100 miles an hour, and you're going to be dead as if you hit that concrete bridge. No, in those barrels are these shock absorbers from the spacecraft's parachutes. And they absorb the impact, hit them at 100 miles an hour, and you and your family will get out and walk away. Hmm. And that's what I hit the other day, the same mechanism. So I just realized for the first time, I saved my own butt. So I put those things out there, and I hit one at 70 miles an hour on cruise control. I fell asleep, and me and my wife got out without a scratch. Wow. Ordinarily, we'd be dead. State Patrol pulled up and wondered why we weren't dead, and I told them it was the guardrail with the cables inside.
Wow.
So why do we want to spend money on a space program? I just told you. There's two projects, the shock absorbers and disposable diapers. I can go for the next 8 hours and tell you hundreds of things come out of the space program that we use all throughout our lives and we don't know anything about. For every dollar you put in a space program, you get a $28 return. Trying to match that on the stock market. You can't.
It's amazing that NASA's kind of dried up. You think it would be throwing more money at it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you got idiots out there called senators and congressmen, and they got these bigger idiots in their pockets called lobbyists, and they're taking it down a road they don't understand the technology I'm talking about, so they don't fund it.
Yeah,
it's the stupidest thing ever. And NASA, with its arrogance, wants to be on a pedestal all the time. It doesn't like the spinoff program, which is the very reason for their existence. Why don't they like it? Because in 1958 and 1964, when it finally got there, President Kennedy ordered NASA to share their technology with the commercial side of our business. And they hated that ever since. Mm. So look where the head of spinoff is at, in a Jesuit college, trying to bury the thing. So spinoffs is where you really make your money back from the space program. It's the best investments a taxpayer could ever get. And you killed the space program. You know, it twice in my lifetime. The second time, I loved it when the idiots told us it's time to celebrate because we're retiring the space shuttle fleet. I'm so mad I shot my TV screen.
Oh my God.
I was so pissed off because my wife asked, what are you doing? I said, the idiot said, celebrate. There's no replacements. And the space shuttle fleet, you check this out. This is a fact. Would you buy a car and drive it for just 33% and then throw it in the junkyard?
No.
That's exactly what you did with the shuttle fleet. They had 66% of their life left, service life, and you put them all in mothballs. Now explain this to me. Oh, you're so smart at NASA. $150 billion platform going around the Earth every hour and a half, and you got no way to get to it. You just put all your vehicles in the mothballs. Where is your logic on this? None. Is something up? Yeah. What? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. But I ain't standing around waiting to watch the NASA show.
Right. No, I agree.
I'm going to start my own.
That's awesome.
Start your own. And David, unfortunately, we are out of time. But Listen, if anybody wants to continue this conversation, David's going to be at Contact in the Desert.
Absolutely.
In a few weeks. You can, David, do you have a website?
I did, but I closed it down because I'm on my way to the Mideast.
Oh, got it. So, well, then you got to go to Contact in the Desert, and we'll probably stop and say hi to Dave and get some more information and do a little sit down with him maybe there at the facility.
Oh, one program I've got, they got me scheduled for. I'm bringing some slides no one's ever seen before.
Oh, great.
It's called the Space Shuttle Program You Did Not Get to See.
Oh, that's always interesting.
Yeah, it's all stuff I've been talking about.
Love
it. You know, you only got about 5% of the shuttle program. The other 95% was left on the cutting floor.
Well, we can't wait to hear it because we're ready. We are ready for some disclosure. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. David, again, you're amazing. Come back and see us again. And
good luck with this whole moon thing, man. I hope that I really.
When you get over there, you're gonna have to come and do another interview with us. Come on, you can't tease us and then let that go.
I'll do transparency with you guys, and I want you to know what's going on.
Please.
God knows you're not getting any information from the main media of
America.
Hell
no. That's why Truth Be Told started.
You've got a caveman that knows more than you guys do.
Hey, don't talk about my family. All right. Well, we are out of here. Please please share this episode with your friends and family and get the word out there. And please know that we're going to be there for you at Contact and show all of our amazing speakers and at their workshops and lectures. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and go to our website, truthbetoldworldwide.com. David, until next time, everybody, have a great time this weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, take care. We'll talk to you soon, guys.
Thank y'all.